This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Well, it's New Year's and Americans start making their resolutions. So we ask people in the polling, what are you resolving to do? Big numbers for those who are making resolutions: improve their health, exercise, spend more time with the people they care about and related, diet, and eat better.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining me. It is good to be here with you today, and I am always delighted to have you join the conversation. If you want to pull up a chair and get in on the convo, the number's 888-914-9149. Let's talk about resolutions for a moment. I saw lots of different data, lots of different study that, a quarter of people abandon their resolutions by the end of the first week, a half by the end of the month. Other numbers said even worse stats, to be honest with you. I don't know if you made New Year's resolutions. I know a lot of people now say, I just don't do it anymore. I'm not going to make New Year's resolutions. I want to talk about the psychology behind this. We're going to be joined by Joe Sikora coming up in just a moment. We'll get his take. He's an author. He's a family therapist. What is it about the mindset? Why is it when the clock ticks January 1, suddenly all of us are saying, okay, no more drinking. Okay, I'm gonna diet. I'm cutting out sugar and carbs. Or okay, I'm gonna work on paying down that credit card debt. We're not spending any more money. I mean, you know the resolutions that you make. We make them. The question is, do you keep them? Statistically, no, you really don't. Less than 25% actually stay committed to their resolution. Just after 30 days, that's small. I mean, 3 out of 4 people and saying, I'm done. How many people succeed? This number surprised me. 8%. 8% of the people succeed. Why is that? I think there's a lot of factors. One, I think our resolutions sometimes are just too vague, right? Maybe they're too ambitious. I tend to be too ambitious when I set mine. I set such high levels, And I think sometimes you set yourself up for failure. You set yourself up by aiming for these dramatic changes, or you want them in a short term. So what is the best way to keep your New Year's resolution? What is with the mindset behind it? Why do so many people fail? As we embrace this new year, it's never too late to start. You have made one, I suggest you do. I'll tell you what I often do, in addition to some very temporal things. I always kind of make the same resolution spiritually every year. And that's just to spend a little bit more time in prayer. I think we can do that. God's the author of time. And you think, oh, I can't pray anymore. I don't have the time. If you make time for God, I'm telling you, trust me on this one, God will expand time. He'll slow it down. He'll send you angels. He'll allow you to get things you never thought you could get done. The thoughts, the ideas, the solutions, they'll come your way. Spend time with God. I feel pressure sometimes knowing how many things have got to be done and how limited my window is to do it. But when I say, all right, Lord, I'm giving this to you, I need your help, it all falls into place. So, those resolutions, maybe resolve to fast or to pray or to sacrifice a little bit more, or to go to adoration once a month. I mean, there's some spiritual things you can do, as well as the weight loss and the financial resolutions as well. But I'm joined today, as I said, by a former colleague of mine here, Joe Sikora. You could check him out online too, and check out his books. He's the author of two of them, Defying Gravity, How Choosing Joy Lifted My Family from Death to Life. That's available at Ignatius. And Joe, it's good to have you back. Good afternoon.
I am so excited to be with you and talking about this very topic. Believe it or not, I woke up this morning thinking, change, New Year's resolutions. And I thought, I'm going to do a podcast on this today. And then I got a call from you and said, hey, you want to talk about this? And I thought, perfect. What a better way than spending time with you, Drew, and the Relevant Radio family talking about New Year's resolutions. There is a science behind change, and I actually have a chapter of it on this in my book, The Whole World's Going Crazy, But You Don't Have To. Now, as a therapist, I am in the changing business. I don't know if you like them or not. I kind of like watching sometimes home makeover shows. But
oh,
why
sure.
is that? To see that house transform. But far more interesting to me is that, how does the human actually make change? How do we make change? What causes us to fall off and not do it? So I want to talk about that, but I think the first thing to do if as you're considering change, drop the idea of New Year's resolution. I would encourage you, don't say, this is my New Year's resolution. Instead, say, this is what I want to change in my life. And what do you want to change? How do you change? We'll get into that. But God calls you to a lifetime, not to sound overwhelming, God calls you to a lifetime of change from the inside out. But I think that you've got to begin by saying, do I need to make a change? If you ask yourself some simple questions, for instance, does your life lack meaning? It's time to make a change. Do you feel stressed out? It's time to make a change. Do you feel like your life is a longer list of regrets than accomplishments? Time to make a change. You know, if you're lacking joy, if your marriage is in crisis, make a change. But get rid of the idea of New Year's resolutions. And let me tell you why, and then we'll go into why the brain resists change and how you can overcome it.
Yeah, go ahead. I'd love to hear it.
New Year's resolutions, first of all, is it's that one day of the year where we say, this is it. This year, January 1st, I'm going to do this. The problem is that doesn't help address the brain's fear response. And that's the most important thing. When you say, I'm going to make this giant change, you're not addressing how the brain actually makes change. The other thing about New Year's resolutions is you're saying, I'm going to lose weight. But let's say by January 30th, you've discovered, oh, I actually really do enjoy eating pizza, and you eat, you know, several slices of pizza. Then what you say to yourself is like, well, I guess I blew it this year. I might as well go back and enjoy life and eat pizza every night. So the whole idea is disastrous if you look at it as, you know, I've got to make this change right now. Now, again, I want to go back to scripture. I love scripture because I thought as I studied the science of change and how the brain makes change, I also said, well, what does God say about making change? And if you read Ephesians chapter 4, verses 22 to 24, and I'll just paraphrase it, God wants you to take on an entirely new way of life. Yeah. That sounds overwhelming, right? But that's basically what Paul says is, I want you to transform. I want your life to be transformed by God. Now, the question is, how do you do that? Now, again, whether your goal is to grow in holiness, to lose weight, to improve your relationships, whatever it is, how you go about it is what matters most. You were talking about, you know, spending more time in prayer, which is a beautiful goal, obviously. But let's say instead you said, oh, I want to grow in holiness. And how I'm going to go about this is I'm vowing to read the entire Bible, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get into it and you start reading some of the chapters of the books, and, you know, Numbers seems a little tedious to you. And I'm not suggesting it is. I'm just saying, you know, you start getting lost and you lose it and you give it up. So whatever the goal is that you want, you have to say, how do I go about it? How do I make the change and sustain the change? So that's what you have to look at. Now, I want to give you a personal example.
Yeah.
You know, as you mentioned, I've written two books. I'm going to say this, even though my publisher said, Joe, please stop saying that. You are a writer. I don't know how to write a book. That's what my brain said. Now, what part of my brain was saying, Joe, you can't write a book? The fear response. Because when you look at the goal of writing the book, fear is going to say, that's big, that's huge, you can't do that. So how do I actually engage the brain in a way that will allow me to write a book? Well, I sit down and I say, I'm not writing a book today. I'm going to write a sentence. I'm going to write two sentences. It might add up to a chapter, right, or a paragraph. Then all of a sudden what you're doing is you're calming down the brain's fear response, the fight or flight response. Can you begin to engage in the process of writing the book? So again, you don't admit to yourself, oh, I'm afraid to do this, or I'm afraid to do this, I'm afraid to write a book. You might not use those words, but that's exactly the mechanism in the brain that gets activated when you try to set a lofty, big goal. It's okay to have big goals, but you've got to first learn how to engage them and break it down into small steps so that you're quieting the brain's fear response. I feel like I'm lecturing. Is this making
no, sense? No, it makes total sense. I totally get it. And Joe, I want to put a plug in for your two books, too. You wrote Defying Gravity as your first. You came out with a second one. I understand the first one is always an experience. Your second is, if I recall the title correctly, is it The Whole World is Going Crazy? I think we talked about that. Was it last year you came out with it?
Yeah. The Whole World is Going Crazy. Yeah, and the difference was I wrote Defying Gravity after my sons were diagnosed with that, you know, neurological degenerative and fatal disease. And it rocked my life. And I said, okay, God, what is this all about? How do I handle this? How do I address this? And that's what Defying Gravity is. It was that sort of a deeply personal memoir. It's a heavy book, but it's also beautiful. People read it and they go, oh, I laughed and I cried and I laughed and I cried. But the second book really came about more as my experience as a therapist, because particularly during COVID, you just saw anxiety going off the charts, depression, divorce, just everything that seemed to be falling apart. And I thought, wait a second, I know about these things. The world is going crazy, but you don't have to. So I actually began writing on the major themes that I encounter as a therapist: anxiety, focus, change, all these different things, to actually help other people. So Defying Gravity was a personal experience. The second book is really about like how to engage and change in your life and make a positive change. Yeah.
My guest today is Joe Sicora. If you're just tuning in, as I said, he's the author of a couple different books. We're talking about resolutions, and I like your approach. You know, you got to scrub the whole idea of a New Year's resolution and really talk about making a life change, and that's good. Goals, though, play a role in that, don't they? At least they do for me. You know, I'm a guy who, if I want to reach a particular long-term goal, I like to set up short goals. Okay, by this month, I'm going to do X. If it comes to writing a book, I need to get X amount of chapters done by this time, or whatever it is. If it's weight loss, you want to lose X by this point in time. You want to save. So there's, I think goals, at least for my mindset, are pretty helpful. What are some strategies for being very effective at bringing about that life change?
Well, there are two aspects, and you're actually describing how to do it successfully. One is you have to break whatever goal, however big it is, down into manageable steps. Again, my example of writing book, I can't write a book, but I told myself I can write a sentence. I can write a paragraph. So it's okay to say, I want to grow in holiness. I want to improve my marriage. But then what you've got to do is address the brain's fear response and say, I've got to make this so small and so manageable that my brain doesn't freak out and stop me from moving forward. Let me give you a silly example. If, for instance, you said, I want to lose weight, but boy, do I love my In-N-Out Burger. Now, if you're not from the West Coast, right. Say McDonald's, right? In-N-Out Burger is so phenomenal.
Yeah.
What I would say is, okay, that's great, but don't say to yourself, I've got to give up eating In-N-Out Burger right now. That might be what you do, but instead, the first time you go to that restaurant, take one French fry and throw it out. The next time you go, take two French fries and throw it out. Now, think of this as a metaphor, right? It sounds silly, but actually what you're doing is you're tricking the brain, saying, oh, I don't need to eat all those French fries. But you're not throwing away the whole container of French fries. You're taking one or two at a time, and you're slowly increasing that. To use a running example, if your goal was to say, I always wanted to run a marathon, right? You don't want to go out, buy all the right clothes, and try to run 26 miles tomorrow.
Yep.
What I would say, and what I tell clients if they want to improve in health, it's like, I want you to go outside, and I want you to walk to the end of the street and back. That's it. Because what you're doing is, A, physically, your body's not going to resist you, but your brain is not going to resist you. Because you're going to say, I can walk to the end of the street and back. Then the next day, you add another, say, 20 yards, and then another 20 yards. And then you start walking faster. So you've got to break it down into small, manageable steps. Because that will allow you to actually begin moving toward your goal. And there's two parts of achieving a goal, and you actually reference this. One is there is the beginning. Beginnings are always scary for people.
Yeah.
How to, you know, whatever change you want to make, you break it down, you make it small. The second part, to stay with the running analogy, right? Marathon runners, they can start the race because they've been running. But we're marathon runners, and again, think of this as a metaphor for your life change. They have what's called hitting the wall, right? At mile 20, 21, whatever it is, right around there, they go, I can't go on. So what do they do? How do they actually address that fear response? I can't do it. They break it down. Okay, I can't run 4 more miles, but I can run 20 feet. I can run 20 yards. I can get to the next corner. I can do so. Again, they break it down into manageable steps. And I want to say this is exactly what God calls us to do as well. As an example, Matthew chapter 10, Jesus says, go out, preach the gospel to all the world, right?
Yeah, right?
But then he says, how do you do this? Well, he actually tells the disciples, he goes, I don't want you going across country. I want you to go right out into your neighborhood. Go up, present the message. If they reject the message, wipe the dust from your shoes and go on. In other words, don't take it personally. And I think how, from a psychological standpoint, what we have to do is to expect that there are going to be rejections. Just as Jesus said, expect there are going to be some people who reject the message. If you're pursuing a goal, you've got to expect setbacks. So what do? You actually have to prepare. What am I going to say to myself when I actually have a setback? That self-dialogue is very important, right? If you say to yourself, oh, I fell down, I missed this week's goal, what do you say to yourself? I'm an idiot, I'm stupid, I can't make it happen, I can't do this. That is one of the biggest predictors of failure, what you say to yourself, because it reinforces that negative belief.
Yeah.
But if you say to yourself, you know what, it's okay, I messed up, but I can do better, I can get back up, and that's what God wants us to do, is to go on, to pick ourselves back up. Does that make sense?
I love it. My guest today, Joe Sikora, if you want to join us, I only have him for a few more moments. Maybe you're struggling with being successful, making that life change. Maybe you need to do it. You know you need to do it. Feel free to tap into his expertise. The number here is 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. You know, the great saints had lots of different strategies. St. Teresa of Avila talked about prayer. You know, Pope Francis, he gave not a dissertation, but he addressed this issue of making changes this year. He went through, I think, 10 or 11 different points, and a lot of them all dealt with the spiritual. Of course, taking care of your spiritual life, taking care of your family, he spoke about how to purify your tongue, and he talked about forgiving and a whole litany of other things. So there's a lot we can do. How important is the spiritual in helping us accomplish those temporal goals for life change, Joe?
Well, it's huge, which is a great question. You need allies to make change, right? Yeah. None of us is an island. God created us all to live in relationship with each other and with him, right? A lot of like life coaches, or, you know, you might see this on the front of a t-shirt, just believe in yourself. You know, that's not true. It's terrible advice, because most of us, when we get knocked down, we don't have a lot of belief in ourselves. But what does God say? I think it's Deuteronomy chapter 21. God says, I will be with you. I won't forsake you. So we always have to think that we have not only, you know, other people around us who can help us, which is very, very important, right? It's important if you're going to make a change to think, who can I make this change with me? Who can support me in this journey? But more importantly, to think God is there with me, right? He can help me to sustain and make this change. When I've lost all my faith in myself, I can believe in God, because there's going to be points and times in your life when you're trying to make a change and say, I can't do this. And what I say as a Catholic, as a Christian, I say is, you're right, Joe, you can't do this. But can you do this if God is working through you, in you, calling you, you know, pushing you? Yes is the answer. So I think that to have that relationship with God, to know that you're not alone, is extraordinarily important.
Yeah.
It's everything.
It really is. I find when I put into practice spiritual practices, like, for example, fasting, It gives me greater control, not only over my body, but over my will, my mind. And those things will then allow you to say, okay, once you're able to get greater self-control in those areas, you got greater governance in other parts of your life. If you want to work out, now that aspect of discipline in your life becomes part of who you are. And it actually becomes easier. You almost build these spiritual muscles. But I think the same thing happens with those life changes. There's something about, it's like vices and virtue, right? It's like the more that you practice a virtue, the stronger that spiritual muscle becomes, you know, whether it's purity or temperance or whatever it could be. It's the same thing with a vice. If you're lazy or you give in to those temptations, it's going to be the same way. So if you want to change, I think if you compliment it, it'll be great. I think Ben Franklin once said, he said, always be at war with your vices. Be at peace with your neighbors and let every new year find you a better person. So, you know, I think we always should strive to be better and to make these changes. And I think one of the greatest is in holiness. I only have about 5 minutes or so for you, Joe. What have you done in your life? And what do you find is maybe the greatest change that, you know, you have made or that you're working on? And what lessons have you learned from that you can help us with?
Well, I was forced into, well, I wasn't forced. I was given a choice. But the dramatic moment in my life, again, was with the diagnosis of my two boys, right? This fatal disease.
Yeah.
And I had to let go, literally, of all of Joe's dreams, all of Joe's ideas about how to go about life, right? Now, the change came slowly. You know, I had to let go of the selfishness, the me-centered dreams and goals and really what I had to do is say, okay, Lord, I have to allow myself to be changed to a man who embraces simplicity, who embraces the small, who chooses to love when it's difficult, to care, right, when it's not easy, when I just want to care for myself. And I think that was the biggest and most important change. And that's consistent, I think, with God's call to all of us, is to love him and to love others as we love ourselves. And that was a slow process. Hopefully it's not done, right? I'm still an evolving creature, being called by God to become more loving. And I'm experiencing it, and it's a joyful thing. But I think, again, the self-talk, you know, it's to remind ourselves that we're not alone, to remind ourselves that this change life is what God's calling us to do. We've all been given gifts and talents, right? Mm-hmm. You know the parable of the talents. And,
yes.
And this man was given this much, and this person was given this much. And the ones who risked the most, who said, yes, I will change. I will let go of what I have known and go toward what God is calling me. They were the ones who experienced the reward. You know, think about Peter. He was a fisherman when Jesus called. And he said, Peter, drop the nets and follow me. Huge change. You know, but then he learned very slowly. His life, Peter's life, all the apostles, all the saints, their lives were transformed slowly, right? As they sort of embraced that grace, as they addressed the fear. And that's the same for you and I. Our life can be transformed. God calls us to that. But we have to address the fear, which I think a well-formed faith in God is obviously huge, right? I'm not alone. That's the big thing. And then just start small, just like Matthew chapter 10. Don't, you know, make it. Your goal maybe is to have a transformed life, but how you go about it, breaking it down into small steps, is really the most important thing to do.
Well, that's great. I know you do a lot of this. You cover a lot of different things on your podcast. Tell us a little bit about that. I was just looking at some of the issues that you covered, from relationships to divorce to all sorts of different things. If people want to check out your podcast, what's the best way to do that? What's that all about?
You can go to my website, joesecora.com. That's kind of a good launching point. But I have stuff on YouTube. I have stuff anywhere you listen to podcasts. I try to put them up regularly. There's probably too much material out there. I'm actually working on something really crazy right now, and I'd love to talk to you about it if it actually happens. I'm creating, you know me, I'm a creative nut.
Sure,
I'm always
creating
something new. But I'm actually trying to create a new TV show. Oh, I'm afraid to even tell you what it is. You're going to think I'm nuts. called zombie therapy.
Oh, wow.
Long story short, I was talking to a good friend of mine who I went to grad school with. And we were talking, he's a playwright, he's written plays and very creative and funny. And we were talking about our different projects. And I said, you know, I always wanted to do a show on therapy. I want to help people, but I want to reach them through comedy, you know, through a lightness where you can actually educate and encourage and inspire, but in a way that's funny. And he said, oh, I always wanted to do a show with zombies and therapy. I go, well, how does that make sense? He goes, well, they just represent all of us, the dark part of our lives, you know, and how do we actually make this change? I said, well, let's try to do this together. So I have no idea what's going to happen here.
Joe, you just keep trying. That's what I say. I had astronaut Tom Jones on with me the last segment, and he said he got turned down from NASA two times before they finally accepted him. And I know that you come out with a bunch of other TV series and podcasts, and you've written books. I know something will break, because I know your goal is to inspire and to help people in both psychological and spiritual growth through all these different mediums. And if people want to check you out, let me just give their website real quick. Maybe there's a producer out there listening to you now, joesikora.com. That's S-I-K-O-R-R-A. JoeSikora.com. Joe, stay on the line. I want to talk to you during the break, but always good to hear from you. Thank you for all that you do, and I wish you the best success.
Thank you, brother.
That's Joe Sikora. Check out his book, Defying Gravity. The world is going crazy, but you don't have to. His TV series, his podcast, and more. He'll be back. You'll hear from him. It's always good to talk with him. Stay with him. We come back. If you are trying to lose weight or have financial resolutions, Dr. Jay Richards will be stopping by. We'll give you some help. Network sponsor Time Bank can make remote account opening easy. No matter where you are in the country, they offer mobile and online banking and knowledgeable bankers that answer the phone. More information at time.bank. That's time.bank. Member FDIC.
What's your New Year's resolution?
Don't have one.
I don't blame you.
Exercise more, for sure.
When has that ever worked in the past?
Never.
What are your resolutions?
For what?
The New Year.
Nope, didn't have any.
What's your New Year's resolution? Travel more?
Yeah.
Ha-ha, there she is. She's got a suitcase. She's doing it. What's your New Year's resolution?
To get off Facebook.
Oh, no.
Absolutely.
You and my mom.
Yes, mom. Go, mom.
Be a great dad. That's my New Year's resolution.
Good for you. It's dads like you that will make the world a much better place.
I don't know. Just to be good to people.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, we're already day four into the new year. I thought I'd touch base early. Normally I do this a couple weeks into the New Year's resolution, but I saw some interesting data that indicated that it's about, you know, just a fraction of people keep their New Year's resolution by the end of this week, let alone the end of the month. And I thought we'd talk a little bit about it. We all make resolutions, I think, in some respects. Now, I know some of you might say, I'm done. Three biggest New Year's resolutions that people make, you know what number one is? Guess. All right, you got it. I know you did. Lose weight, right? Of course. People want to exercise, get healthy. They want to lose weight. They want to eat better. You know what the second one is? It's get their finances in order, right? I think that's critical. At the end of the year, you have so much credit card debt and other debts that probably mount that you're probably like, I've got to try to get control over that. Gym memberships, you know, how many ads do you see for the gym at this time of year, or for weight loss products? So I want to talk about that and a whole lot of other things. Ozempic has been big, weight loss drugs. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the week. But, you know, you heard my interview with Joe Sikora. Resolutions are easy to make, right? But they're often hard to follow up on. And there's so much we can improve in our lives, and I know it can be overwhelming. So I want to talk today a little bit about some of these different areas. We can talk, let's talk health. And then let's talk finance, and let's talk spiritual too, okay? I mean, I have three different categories. I think the spiritual perhaps is the most important one to make. I think personally it's foundational for all the other fixes. If you can spend more time in prayer, I think your mind becomes illuminated, your heart gets convicted. If you can fast, you get this spirit of self-governance and control. That'll ripple out into all the other aspects of your life. The anxiety diminishes when you pray. So when it comes to the expenses and all the other problems you're dealing with, there's a certain clarity. I think prayer and fasting clarify the spiritual landscape. They clarify your landscape, period. So it's always a resolution for me. Spend more time with the Lord. It will never fail. And I've invited somebody who understands all of these things intimately. His name is Dr. Jay Richards. He's a senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation. He's been with us throughout the years here talking about fasting. He wrote a great book, by the way. If you're looking to lose some weight, right, you want to get healthy, check out his book, Eat, Fast, Feast. Heal your body while feeding your soul. It's a Christian guide to fasting. He's also understands economics and much more, and we'll get into all that with him coming up. But, Doctor, it's good to have you with me today. Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year to you as well, Drew. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you making time for us today and to deal with these issues. I know the time will fly, and there's a lot to get to, but let's start with the physical first. I think most, with all the gym memberships and the advertisements you see and all the eating people do over the holidays, they get on the scale January 1, they're like, oh my gosh, I put on 5 pounds. Are you kidding me? Everybody resolves to lose weight, and a lot of people go dry. January, they give up alcohol and they start new regimens, but they tend to lose those. So weight loss, let's start with that. You know, the Super Bowl will be here in a month. By that time, I think most people have already given in. Your thoughts on strategies to be successful in getting maybe healthy? I know you and I have spoken in the past about intermittent fasting, but give us a perspective, give us some strategies.
Absolutely. I mean, let me just give you the kind of general strategy that applies for these physical and health resolutions as well as the rest. I mean, first of all, as a resolution, we know that this is a good practice. This idea of kind of pre-commitment is something. What we do is we recognize the fact ahead of time that we're going to be weak in the moment. And so we say, okay, let's make a commitment ahead of time. So this, it really makes sense. New Year's resolution, it marks a time. It works at the scale of a year. So all that stuff's good. The reason, I think, primary reason that people fail when they do this is for a couple of things. Either they're not specific enough, and so they're just way too general. Lose weight. That is just not a good resolution. It doesn't sort of guide action. There's no target exactly, except, you know, okay, do I get lighter on the scale or something? Right. Then it's not fractionated. So it's not actually chopped up in any kind of particular way. We are temporal beings that live hours and days, and they're all separate from each other. And then it's not incremental. Because we're creatures of habit, if you say, well, my goal is to run a marathon, but you don't have a plan to do that, and you haven't jogged for 18 years, you're never going to run a marathon. But any moderately healthy person, believe it or not, can actually work their way up to running a marathon in about a year, as long as they do it according to kind of the well-known increments. And so those are the secrets. Be specific, chop it up, that make little fractions that make sense, like daily or hourly, whatever it might be, and then be incremental so that you do things in which you just, it's kind of an on-ramp to be able to accomplish this goal. And you start small, but it's always directional toward that ultimate goal.
Yeah, I love it. It makes sense, right? I'm a big believer in small goals to accomplish the bigger goal, whether it's finance or whether it is weight loss or health or whatever it is, even fasting. We've talked about that in the past. You know, I said to my wife about it, you know, after the holidays, you try to get back into fasting. I've been doing a lot more fasting recently, in longer form fasting, you know, more than just the 24-hour fast. And it took a little while to build up to that, but as you began to do it, it almost becomes, I don't know, I don't want to say it's easier, but you know the part, the peaks where it's going to be a little difficult, where you got to push through, and you know when you're going to be smooth sailing afterwards. But let's talk about that as well. Let's talk about the fasting as well, in terms of just trying to be healthy in general, eating the right foods. Of course, I don't know where you stand on carbs or all these crazy diets that are out there. Give me your take on the various diets, but also how critical or important fasting can be.
It's absolutely crucial, and I mean, I'm convinced that it is, but it is the kind of missing ingredient, both with respect to our spiritual health and our physical health. I mean, we know that there are these diseases of civilization, whether it's hypertension or obesity or type 2 diabetes, all in some way related to this, whereas for most of human history, people had a lot to eat. Sometimes they had a moderate amount to eat most of the time, and then sometimes they didn't eat at all. And so that kind of punctuated pattern of variation is it's the natural rhythm traditional Christian fasting followed this. It sort of formalized and made this a ritual in which you have a feast, but it always preceded by a fast, whether it's Lent, which is the one we still kind of recognize, or the Advent fasting season. And so there's really nothing wrong with, in principle, say, gaining 5 pounds from, say, Christmas Eve until Epiphany, if you lose 5 pounds too, right? The right kind. If you've pre-fasted and then you feast, and then you go off of it so that over the course of a year, you're not sort of slowly gaining weight, that's not a problem. Our problem is that we've kept the feast and we've dropped the fast. Yeah. And once again, as you said, fasting, like a marathon, don't say, I'm going to do a 7-day fast. That's just crazy. What you want to do is slowly narrow the window in which you eat over a few weeks and then slowly build up the time in which you fast. And what you discover is, yeah, it's hard. It's still a sacrifice. But it's not torture. It's a skill that your body can adapt to.
Let me ask you about fasting just in general. I know that after, I don't know, 12, 18 hours, you go into autophagy, right? And the body starts to really clean up damaged proteins and all sorts of other things in the body. It allows your digestive system to rest, et cetera. Is there a limit to how far you should go with a fast? For example, the intermittent fast, if you do 18 hours or even if you do 24 hours, you eat, that's fine. But what happens when you do 36 or 48 or 60? Is there a limit, 72-hour fast? I mean, that's a long time, but is there a point where we have diminishing returns on a fast, a water fast?
Well, yeah, it depends on what you're looking for. We do know, contrary to people's impressions, your body doesn't immediately go into starvation mode if you're fasting and downshift. That does happen if you persistently deprive yourself of calories. Your body will just basically slow down to adapt to the lower amount of food coming in. When you fast, actually, strangely, if you're not eating anything, your body will actually speed up your metabolism. Initially, weirdly, it increases growth hormone and norepinephrine. And it takes your body about 5 days to get back to baseline from where you were before you started in terms of the rate of your metabolism. So beyond 5 days, it does start to slow down your metabolism, but depending on why you're doing it and if you're healthy, it might really make sense. But for most people, I would say it's between that, say, 18 hours on the really low side, which you're eating every day, and up to about 72 hours or 3 days. If you do that periodically throughout the year, you've really got what it takes to be able to make what I call the fasting lifestyle sustainable forever.
So what do you do? Do you do a mix of fasting short-term and long-term?
Exactly. And I try to map it along the church calendar. So I do very specific and it's sort of extra things during Lent and during Advent. I almost always, unless the calendar just doesn't allow it, fast at least until dinner every Wednesday and Friday. And then four times a year, I do this Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Ember Day fast. So you have these different time scales that, you have a kind of daily fast, which is when you sleep. You have a weekly fast when I go basically 23 hours, 2 days a week. And then some of these longer fasts, especially Holy Week, where I go 72 to 100 hours, but I rarely go beyond that.
Wow. What's the hardest part for you? My hardest part is the day one. If my last meal, let's say, is Sunday, all right, come dinner time on Monday, I am so hungry. But if I could push through that, then it just becomes easy after that, for me at least. I don't know how it is with other people.
No, the reality is whatever your body is used to, the second you break the pattern, it's hard because that's just what your body's used to. But I can tell you when I'm normally going and Wednesdays and Fridays, I don't spend, I think, not about food at all
that's
until
awesome.
Dinner. But I could tell you right now, I decided to do this for several days this week because of Christmas.
Yeah.
Well, I've been eating sugar and all sorts of stuff. And so it's honestly killing me. Yeah. I can't wait to have dinner tonight after we talk.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I share your passion. The gut biome is something else I talk with another physician a lot about. That's big into the diet. But let me ask you about these other diets. A lot of people are thinking exercise will help them lose weight. Some people are saying, okay, I'm going to cut out the carbs and the sugar. There are diet plans like Weight Watchers. There is GOLO or Noom or ones that are out there like that. Are there certain principles that cross all these diets that we should be employing? That will be successful?
Yeah. I mean, the simple one is the sugar. I mean, that's every diet that you look at, that's the one that they all agree on. So simple sugars are that they should be things that you indulge in once in a while. They should not be a normal part of your diet. I think it's fairly clear that eating constantly and not having periods where you don't eat is now that's just generally a bad idea. I do think that if you're wanting to actually lose body fat specifically, that drastically reducing carbs, sometimes not persistently, all the way down until you get into ketosis, so your body knows how to burn fat is really crucial. And by the way, fasting allows you to do that. You want your body to be able to use carbohydrates for fuel, and you want it to be able to use fats for fuel. But if you never fast, if you never limit the amount of carbs you eat, your body's not going to be able to do that. It's, I think those are the kind of key principles. And then also avoid diets that involve persistent reduction of calories, because if you do that for too long, it slows down your metabolism. So you want to do something that allows you to lose weight, but doesn't just shut down your metabolism so that you're, you lack energy. I mean, that backfires. But almost everything works in the short term. But 99% of these fad diets, unfortunately, over about a year, they just don't work.
Yeah. My guest today, Dr. Jay Richards, author of a great book. If you're looking to learn a little bit more about fasting or even just how to get greater self-mastery, you can check out his book. Is there a good website to get your book other than I'm sure they get it on Amazon, but is there a place you want to drive them to?
No, you drive them there. You got Christian books for sure. But it's funny, Drew, right now, for some reason, Amazon has it on the paperback $9.95. So it's actually on sale right now to Amazon.
Well, good stuff. So you can check out that book there. When we come back, we could talk more. We'll take a few of your calls. I only have about 10 minutes with the good doctor. So if you want to get in, the number is 888-914-9149. I'll go to the phones in the next segment. That's 888-914-9149. But I do want to talk finances too, because I know a lot of people say, I don't know how this happens, but boy, that credit card's gotten high, or man, I don't know what's happening. Food costs, gas, everything is just really weighing down on me. I have less money than I used to in my paycheck. If you're finding yourself in debt, or you feel you don't know how to manage your finances, feel free to give us a call too. We'll take a look at New Year's resolutions to maybe help you better handle your finances, or maybe even get out of debt. And of course, we'll talk the spiritual. So feel free to join us. We're back with more right after this.
Your Life Connected.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
You can support Relevant Radio in many ways. Joining a giving society, donating a vehicle you don't need anymore, and now donating a piece of land or other real estate. Donate now at relevantradio.com/property.
Your news, your issues, your opinion. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Yeah, time is the enemy, I'll tell you that much. It flies by. I wish I had more time to spend with you. Just a few brief moments left. I'll take a few of your calls at 888-914-9149. So feel free to join the conversation. I'll go to the phones in a minute. If you're just joining us, you know, we just started the new year. We're not even through the first week. I thought maybe we could talk just briefly about resolutions. You know, as I've mentioned before, by the first week of January, they say something, statistics show that less than 25% of people actually stay committed to their resolution after 30 days, and only a fraction of people actually succeed in doing them. And we're talking weight loss here. We could talk finances. I know that's another thing that can be really crippling for a lot of people. And I've been touching on the spiritual because I think it's really critical. The Holy Father, he met before Christmas with Vatican employees and a bunch of lay people with their families. And he asked them to do two things for the new year. And here are the resolutions that the Holy Father had suggested we do. He says, one, take care of your spiritual life, right? Take care of your relationship with God, because this is the backbone of everything that we do, everything that we are. I think that was such salient advice. He said, take care of your family. Give your children and your loved ones not just money, but most of all, your time, your attention, and your love. He says, take care of your relationships with others, you know, transforming your faith into life and your words into good works. And he says, be careful how you speak. Make sure you purify your tongue. Stop using vulgarity, you know, stop giving in the worldly decadence. And he says, heal the wounds of the heart. How do you do that? He says, I love this, with the oil of forgiveness. It It's how you heal it. Forgive those who have hurt you. Medicate those wounds that you have caused to others. And then he says, look after your work and do it with humility and with passion and with love for the Lord. He says, don't envy, forget about anger. He goes through a whole litany of other things, but he says, take care of your brothers and sisters who are weaker, the elderly, the sick, the hungry, the homeless, strangers, because in all this will be judged. A whole litany of things the Holy Father has given us. And I think they're wonderful resolutions for us to incorporate. I'm joined today by Dr. Jay Richards. And Doctor, I love what the Holy Father had to say. You know, some people say, well, I'd love to feed the homeless or I'd love to forgive. These things, you know, they seem like lofty goals. But even as we were just talking about fasting and even the prayer life, you know, when I started fasting, I started small. When I wanted to spend more time with the Lord, I started by making short visits, you know. These things build up. Address the spiritual life before we maybe even talk about the financial life. What are the steps to being successful in it?
It's the same stuff. I mean, very often people have this kind of pietistic sense that, oh, well, no, you know, I don't want to be too utilitarian with my spiritual life. Trust me. If you want to pray more, you need a plan for how you're going to pray more. Or let's take something really concrete. Like a lot of Christians will think, okay, I want to read the Bible next year. And that'll be their spiritual New Year's resolution. That's great. What's your daily plan? I can tell you, this is pretty much the best way to read the Bible in a year is to go online and find one of the plans that breaks it down every day and tells you exactly what you need to read every day. It's actually not that much. It's basically three chapters, maybe a psalm or a proverb. You do that for 365 days. Guess what? You're going to read the Bible. And if you print it out, you actually have a way to tick it off every day. You could sort of cross it out. Look, this is why video games and games on our phone are so fun, because they give us these little incremental rewards. Reduce it to that, chop it up, even, and don't say, well, no, it's a spiritual discipline, really, should be spontaneous or something. That just doesn't make any sense. The reality is the great saints had basic disciplines and practices that they put into effect every single day. You got to do that with these things.
I couldn't agree more. All right, let's grab a few phone calls. I know how quickly time will go. Michelle's up first. She's been waiting. She's got a question for you. She's listening in Riverside, California. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. And I just wanted to ask, it's kind of a silly question, but what would you recommend for first starting out fasting, meaning, you know, like how long and what would that look like? Is it water only? And then the other part to that is, how do you push yourself through the point when you don't really think you can do it? And you kind of talked about that with the last person that you spoke with, Drew, but, you know, just about that fear of going, I can't do this. So that's my question.
Yeah, those are great questions. So the first one, the way to ease into fasting is just slowly narrow the amount of time in which you eat during the day. So most of us eat about 16 hours out of the 24-hour day. In other words, starting in the, you know, right when you get up, and then you eat a snack, usually a bowl of cereal right before you go to bed. Well, just start narrowing the amount of time during the day when you eat. That's what this so-called intermittent fasting is. You just narrow the time window. And so let's say you get it down to 8 hours. Well, then that's 16 hours out of a 24-hour day that you haven't eaten. Then narrow it, do that for a week, and then slowly narrow it down to 4 hours a week. Then meet to eat less. You eat all the food you normally would eat, but do it in a 4-hour period. And then you slowly do that over a period of weeks. I would say if you've never done it, maybe do this for 4 weeks until you get to a 23-1 window. In other words, you just eat all your food in a 1-hour window and you go 23 hours without eating. At this point, your body's actually used to that. It's not freaking out. Your blood sugar's not dropping. And only then are you really in the position to be able to go a full day without eating. In other words, a 36-hour fast where you quit eating dinner, say, on a Monday, and you don't eat again until Wednesday. But notice I never try to do that 36-hour fast right off the bat. And then you don't reach, I mean, that's the kind of hump, going two nights. But if you build up to that, there's not this sort of terrifying cliff or wall that's standing in front of you, preventing you from ever doing it.
Michelle, I wish you the best. I hope you're successful, and it will transform your spiritual life. But it also just the clarity that comes with your mind and how you feel. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I'm a big advocate of it. Been able to do it successfully for a while, doctor. It was a real struggle for me. Yeah. And now I'm starting to build those fasting muscles. Joanne's in Traverse City, Michigan. Joanne, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I've been doing fasting for a long time. I'm an herbalist, and I really believe that it's important as far as going into a fast, say eating more easy to digest things, soup or whatever, and then when you're coming out, doing more easy. Because, you know, if you're eating a steak whenever you're done, and before you start, you're eating a steak. That's, to me, like a whole other, that's not healthy at all.
It's a great question, Joanne. Let me throw back to the doctor. Doctor, you know, some people do broth or they do something that's more gentle on the digestive system. What do you recommend?
Yeah, I don't think what you eat right before makes all that much difference unless it's a lot of sugar. But if you do a very long fast, it's absolutely right. You don't want to jump right into something. If you've gone 36 hours or 48 hours without eating, you don't want to hit your stomach and your system with, let's say, a steak and potatoes right off the bat. And it's well known, but you want to ease in with maybe a light salad or some broth like that, and then give it a couple hours because your stomach is shrunk. Your body is highly sensitive to insulin at that point. And so definitely the longer your fast, the more you want to ease back into eating heavy food.
Well, my apologies to May in Ohio and everyone else. May had a question about how to straighten out her finances this year. We'll have to revisit that. Doctor, your book, Eat, Fast, and Feast, is available. I know online people can get it for a great price. Also, follow Dr. J. Richards on X at Dr. J. Richards. That's Dr. J. Richards. He is a senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation as well. And it's great to have him with us.